It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. In 1908, Reverend William Lloyd Clark of Davenport wrote, "If I owned hell and Davenport, I would sell Davenport and keep hell." The city was called the worst city in the country, the wickedest city in the West, and it was the Bucktown neighborhood that earned Davenport that reputation. This hour, we'll learn about this neighborhood then and now. With me, Jonathan Turner. He lives in the Quad Cities. He's an arts and entertainment reporter for the Dispatch and the Rock Island Argus. He's the author of A Brief History of Bucktown, Davenport's Infamous District Transformed. Hello, Jonathan.
Hello, Charity.
Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you very much for having me.
And let's go back in time to this part of Davenport, Iowa, the Bucktown neighborhood. First of all, how big a neighborhood is this? Where is it in town?
It's the eastern edge of downtown. It's, if you know, the government bridge is kind of on the east edge of downtown that crosses the river. It's from Brady Street, kind of divides the downtown. It's the eastern edge and from the river up about 4 or 5 blocks.
All right. And this neighborhood, we're going to talk about the many things that were going on in the Bucktown area. But give me a little bit of background of how it came to be.
Well, it really flourished at the kind of late 19th century. It was settled. Davenport was primarily settled by German immigrants who came from a certain province in Germany in 1848 during the political
Schleswig-Holstein region,
revolution.
Right?
They were called the 48ers. And Germany, and you know their affection for beer and beer halls, and they brought that love for alcohol, for music, for literature, for theater. So Davenport really was settled and led by very prominent German Americans who were leaders in business, politics, the arts, architecture, pretty much every kind of facet of life. And they brought their love for both a highbrow and lowbrow culture that really defined that area.
Well, and the phrase, the wickedest city in the West, you know, I don't think about Davenport, Iowa as really being part of the West.
Not just the West, the entire country.
The entire country.
And when you think of it, that in the mid-19th century, Davenport was the West. I mean, this was
right.
The
settlement. I mean, this was really a frontier town.
The first bridge to cross the Mississippi River was a railroad bridge that opened in 1856 in Davenport. And promptly burned. And there was a famous case that you may know that Abraham Lincoln helped defend the bridge and railroad company because it was sued by the owner of the riverboat and who claimed that, you know, the bridge hindered navigation in the river. And that was a very famous case called the Effie Afton case.
So this town was kind of a nexus. Not only was it a town that was full of German immigrants with a love of a good beer garden, but it was on the Mississippi River and it was on the railroad. So did that make Davenport a real meeting place?
Definitely. I mean, the transportation obviously improves access from the rest of the country and the railroad bridge brought immigrants and brought more people and, you know, boosted the population. And all the river traffic, all the boats and people that traveled the Mississippi, one of the people that I consulted who was an expert on Davenport would talk about in river towns when you're traveling, you get off to see a new town and you partake in things that you probably wouldn't in your hometown. And they kind of that whole river boat and river town atmosphere kind of took advantage of the naughty body side of things.
Well, and I want to finish reading that quote that I started reading earlier
right.
by Reverend William Lloyd Clark. Again, he said, "If I owned hell and Davenport, I would sell Davenport and keep hell." Then he went on to say, Davenport is saturated with rum and catacombed with houses of ill fame from her vile levee districts to the top of her polluted hills. The city is filled with beer saloons and beer gardens. It's the home for dives of the vilest sort. Ragged children carry buckets of beer through the streets at all hours of the day or night. The streets resound with the drunken laughter of prostitutes.
It was a good time. It was the place to be.
Well, and it was a place where it was kind of a center of industry, too. So it was a place where it drew people to Davenport who were looking for work.
Sure. I mean, most of your cities across America, I mean, the downtown is the place where it's settled. The center, the kind of the core of your city. Is where businesses first start, and you grow. Obviously, you grow and expand beyond your core. And Bucktown really became, like you said, the center for industry. A lot of manufacturing and businesses of all sorts were down in that area.
Do we know why it became called Bucktown?
There are a few different theories. I mean, there's a popular – I didn't come across it in my research, but there's a popular saying that a man could partake of any sin he sought out for a buck or a dollar. One of the main reference books that I used in my book was a history by a University of Nebraska historian who said it in the 1880s it really became known as Bucktown – possibly for the backroom poker games in saloons, which gamblers passed the buck or buck knife to indicate whose turn it was to deal, or more likely the bucks referred to the single men who populated the hotels, saloons, and brothels that were clustered in the neighborhood.
So the area, Bucktown, you know, was where all of these saloons were and the brothels and all of that. But as Davenport grew, I mean, it became kind of a thriving city, not just a center of commerce, but really arts and culture as well.
Sure. I kind of divide my history book into sections that talk about the strong German-American heritage, the alcohol kind of whole debate over regulation of alcohol and prostitution. In the late 19th century, prostitution was actually regulated. And it's culture, because obviously Germans had a very strong culture in their home country. And once in Davenport, they formed musical societies and choruses, instrumental groups, and many, many theaters. There was a famous opera house called the Burtis Opera House, where the Quad City Symphony premiered in 1916. But the opera house was about 50 years old by the time it even had started. And the first conductor of the Quad City Symphony, then known as the Tri-City Symphony, was German. Many German musicians were in the orchestra. You know, there were many different instrumental ensembles, and the culture was, yeah, very strong.
Now, you mentioned regulation of alcohol, and this Bucktown area, when you described it, when the wrangling over regulation of alcohol started taking place, and this was a very long process, but at some point it was mandated that the saloons had to close at midnight. And when that happened, a bunch of saloons had to go out and buy locks because they had never closed before.
Right.
Like, they were operating 24 hours a day, open doors.
Yeah, yeah. There were fierce debates over the slightest changes in the hours. And, you know, I make reference to I think it was 1907, there was a pro-saloon parade just through downtown with a marching band and thousands of citizens, and people really got up in arms about making sure that their saloons and their access to alcohol was kind of free and unfettered.
Wow. Well, and of course, the temperance movement started long before Prohibition, and sort of in the early years of the temperance movement, there was a moment where the mayor of Davenport declared. He said the liquor law of the state of Iowa will not be enforced in the free and independent state of Scott. So,
Scott County almost
became its own country.
Yeah, that's a famous battle cry, the state of Scott. Even if Iowa as a whole, the legislature would adopt prohibitions, but the strong, you know, German heritage of Davenport and Scott County at one point had 240 saloons, and they were going to do things their way.
So the city was a thriving city for the time. It was never that large. It seems hard to imagine a city of the size that could support that many saloons. Was it because there were so many travelers?
Right. I'm not sure. I'm sure that that had something to do with it. There were just in the Bucktown area, I reference, you know, 40-some brothels and that even more saloons clustered in that area. But part of the, yeah, being the kind of destination and the river traffic and the railroad traffic of visitors, I'm sure contributed to that.
Well, and as the wrangling over prohibition, or at least the control of the sale of alcohol, took place, did that seem to slow things down in Bucktown?
Well, the kind of downfall of the heyday of Bucktown did take place more closer to the end of World War II. And so as you're seeing the move to national prohibition, there were laws and things that really shut down brothels. And by 1917, it was almost gone necessarily. I mean, there was a military that at the arsenal right there, they had laws that prohibited saloons and brothels within a certain distance of any military base.
So regulation caught up with the free and independent state of Scott, huh?
Right.
All right, we're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. I'm talking with Jonathan Turner. He is a journalist, and he's just published his first book. It's called A Brief History of Bucktown, Davenport's Infamous District Transformed. You can join our conversation, 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. This is a part of Davenport that is experiencing a major renaissance right now. We'll talk about that in just a moment as well. Then later in the hour, a conversation with Iowa singer-songwriter Asher Brown. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. My guest is Jonathan Turner. He is a journalist, and he's also the author of the new book, A Brief History of Bucktown, Davenport's Infamous District Transformed. And we've been talking a lot about the history of this area. Now, as time went on and Davenport grew, there were really some – we talked about the arts and culture of the area beginning to thrive. And one of the theaters in the area that a lot of really interesting stuff happened at was the Burtis Theater, acclaimed as the finest theater. Tell us about the Burtis.
So the Burtis Opera House was opened in 1867. It was a 1,600-seat, very opulent, very beautiful, like you said, referred to as the finest theater between New York and San Francisco. It had a huge dome. It had a huge proscenium. It hosted the finest acts in the country. It had opera. It had authors. Mark Twain spoke in 1869. Actress Sarah Bernhardt performed in 1887. Her protege Lily Langtree. The following year, actor Edwin Booth appeared at the Burtis 1888. And as you may know, his younger brother, John Wilkes Booth, famously assassinated
him, yes.
Lincoln. And Lincoln had, you know, that role in terms of Davenport. There were shows there through Like I said, the Quad City Symphony had opened there in 1916, and it just became a leading cultural kind of highlight downtown.
So the Burtis Theater then started on fire, which was really a blow to that district.
Yeah, there was a bizarre case of arson that it struck in April of 1921. It was virtually destroyed. It was later rebuilt kind of in a totally different fashion to about a third of its original size. The arson took place as part of several – there were several fires that struck that area of downtown. And, of course, you know, that would force the orchestra to find a new home. And the Burtis building, that building has been reused over the years. It still kind of remains in its stunted form downtown. But the orchestra has its home at the Adler Theater, which is a very famous 1931 former RKO movie house, which is just a couple blocks away.
How would you describe this theater scene? I mean, there were the actors that were traveling around, and there was this combination of high and low culture in the theater scene in Davenport.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, there were many theaters that kind of came and went. There were vaudeville houses, there were burlesque shows, there was, you know, both the high and low culture. There was one theater appropriately called the Liberty, which one person referred to as Davenport's Shame, a bump and grind burlesque house powered by a dozen or so tawdry looking girls wearing little as they flirted, kicked, and danced to the beat of loud drums and tinkling pianos for the amusement of seedy men and callow boys. So there were several theaters kind of clustered in the area as well. Silent movies also. And like I said, the RKO Orpheum was the huge movie house that went on to just show movies until, I think, the early 70s.
So as time went on, what happened to this district? Did it – obviously, you know, a lot changed in Iowa towns throughout the 20th century. As this district evolved, what did it turn into in the mid part of the century?
Well, as with any downtowns, I mean, with the development of shopping malls, shopping centers, people moving outside of downtown – that's kind of the flight to the suburbs. Downtowns across the country struggled, and it was very strong in terms of a center of business through World War II, through the post-war 50s and early 60s. The first major malls. I think the Davenport Mall opened in 72 or 73. So it really kind of struggled. Plus the farm crisis that affected most of Iowa and the Midwest in the early 80s really, knocked downtown for a loop. And it, referred to in the book pretty much as a ghost town. It kind of was abandoned. Buildings deteriorated. You know, businesses fled. And it really was down on its luck.
You've been in this area since 1995, and
as an
arts and culture reporter yourself, when did you stumble across the name Bucktown? Is that something that people still use in Davenport?
Well, I've been very fortunate. 1995, and since in the past 20 years, it's been amazing throughout the Quad Cities, both on the Illinois and the Iowa side. There's tremendous development, tremendous growth, and you could say, they had nowhere to go but up. I mean, there's been so much development improvement, both downtown and both throughout Davenport. Bucktown is referred to mainly for the current Bucktown Center of the Arts, which opened actually in 2005. It's part of the whole kind of ongoing revitalization, restoration of historic buildings downtown. They kind of wanted to pay homage to that area, the Bucktown area. It's a collection of art galleries and studios and residential living space. And it's in a 1910 brick building, which was the site of a very famous kind of restaurant, garden, and pavilion where they had performers. And Al Jolson actually was a waiter at that location.
A singing waiter,
no less,
right?
A singing waiter who also performed at the Burtis Opera House. But the past 10 to 20 years, the Bucktown area has really been revitalized and growing, and the whole downtown. So the publisher had seen one of the stories I wrote on Bucktown Center for the Arts, contacted me. They work with authors, you know, like me across the country to commission these short history books.
So what's the sort of general feeling about this Bucktown history? Do you find that it surprises people to learn about the seedy side of Davenport?
Oh, definitely. I mean, it was eye-opening to me, obviously, as someone who's not from the area, and it's a very colorful history. And one of my main sources was the head of the Downtown Davenport Partnership, which is part of our Chamber of Commerce. And he knew some of the history, but he's a big supporter of raising this awareness, and people should be proud of it and not kind of keep it like the black sheep in the closet, not talk about it, because I think every city has its less than savory elements that makes the city what it is, and the historic buildings downtown make the city what it is. And so it's something, you know, to be proud of and to talk about.
I'm talking with Jonathan Turner. He's the author of A Brief History of Bucktown, Davenport's Infamous District Transformed. You're welcome to join our conversation. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. I'm not sure if you'll be able to answer this question or not, but here's a Twitter question. Could you ask your guest about the long and forgotten bar called Stickman's? Is Stickman's something that came up in your research?
Maybe there's a current, well, I don't know how old it is. There's a current Stickman's that's in a historic building, but it's not in the Bucktown area. It's kind of up on the hill, more in central Davenport. So I don't know if that's the same one the person's referring to.
All right. Let's go to the phone. Stacy is on the line in Washington. Hi, Stacy.
Good morning, Charity. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure. What would you like to talk about?
Well, I am currently a student at the University of Iowa working on my honors thesis in the history department there. And my topic has been differences of anti-German sentiment between Iowa communities during World War I. And in my research, I discovered that Davenport had a much stronger sense of anti-German sentiment than, say, Burlington, Iowa. Burlington, Iowa had very few reports of such activity and sense, and so I've been researching that, trying to find out what those differences were. My research has led me to believe that it was because Davenport had first-generation immigrants more towards continuing towards an after World War I than Burlington did. And I'm wondering if the author of the book has any thoughts on that and if he ran into any of that type of information.
Interesting. Well, and of course, yeah, Davenport is very proud of its German history at this point in time. Is that something that you did look into at all?
Yeah, I mean, there was strong anti-German sentiment, you know, in the World War I and following the First World War period. It wasn't necessarily a focus of my book in this section. I know that, German newspapers were banned. I think teaching of German in schools was banned. There was a lot of discrimination and a lot of, like your caller is mentioning, that anti-German sentiment. So it's not, I'm familiar with it, but I didn't do much research for this project.
Right. Let's go to the phones. Former State Senator Pat Dillery's on the line. Hi, Pat. Oh, there you go. Hi.
If I made one or two quick points, it would be to encourage your guest author, who is fascinating, and I certainly have enjoyed the program up till now.
Thank you.
Distinguish between 1860, when things might have been a little wilder, to the late 19th century and into the 20th century, because your opening few minutes of this interview seem to bring all of that, in my opinion, from 1860 right to the present day, which is, from my
very different,
a little unfair.
Oh, absolutely. Well, and Jonathan writes extensively about that in the book. That's actually where we were headed next. But I mean, there really has been a remarkable transformation in Davenport, and specifically in this district. Senator, thanks so much for calling.
Well, let me say one more.
Okay.
One would be that do not neglect the Irish influence in
sure.
Davenport, Scott County, and that part of the world. It's true that when I first ran, the Turner Halls were still quite prominent, and Turner Halls were once called Turnverein
right.
or something like that, which was German. But the other side, and I did my first political event at Northwest Turner Hall, but the other side of the coin would be that there was an Irish settlement going from the river up to Sacred Heart Church, the cathedral, and that was called Cork Hill. And there was so
oh, yeah.
Your
no, I do refer to other immigrant groups. Obviously, there's a strong Irish, very strong Irish component to development of Davenport. And I admit the other ethnic immigrant groups are not as much a focus as the German heritage. I apologize for that.
Well, Senator, again, thank you so much for your call. And we've got about 5 minutes left. Let's talk about how this district has been transformed. We were talking about these historic buildings. They did fall into disrepair for a lot of years, as has happened in so many communities. But they, one by one, have really been making a comeback. People have been investing in this area. What are some of the things that you're seeing?
Yeah, it's been really remarkable. Like you said, many downtowns both tear down old buildings and decide to restore. That's up to each developer in terms of what makes sense in terms of the significance of an old building. Downtown Davenport went through tremendous demolition of several buildings, you know, dilapidated, empty buildings. And in my research, one of the consultants that worked on downtown's strategic plan found that Davenport was 284th in population among U.S. cities, but 19th nationwide for the total places on the National Register of Historic Places. So there's a lot of pride in terms of the historic buildings. Since the 80s, a lot of the old buildings have been restored into living spaces, rental, loft apartments. A lot of downtowns, it's kind of the chic, trendy thing to attract younger people to live downtown, to be close to where you work, and the nightlife, the bars, the restaurants. So there's been a lot of growth in terms of restoring, bring these historic buildings back to life, and both in terms of ground floor retail, the living spaces. It's just been tremendous, and kind of one by one, gradually over the years, there's been, you know, the new art museum that's already 10 some years old is just a jewel on the river there, the Figge Art Museum. And so it's a combination of building new and restoring what's there.
And this colorful history seems to enhance the area now.
Right. I mean, I think for a lot of people, it's a draw, and they kind of like that kind of colorful history. And like I said, they want to be downtown. They want to be close to where the action is. So in the book, I kind of bring it full circle, where all the nightlife, the culture, the bars, and the center for work and play is back in this area, but just without the brothels.
And we are nearly out of time, but maybe you can, speaking of that colorful history, here's a question from Tammy. She says, one of my favorite interesting characters in the book is a man named Brick Monroe. Can Jonathan share a little bit about him?
So Brick's place is, that's the pavilion that was on the site of the current Bucktown Center for the Arts. He was known coast to coast One of the quotes says, traveling men would make jumps from 100 to 300 miles away just to spend Sunday at Brix. The place was patronized by men from every walk of life, and there was a steady stream of gold into the till. He always made a point of saying he didn't have prostitutes in his place of business. It was a place to be for entertainment, for beer, for music, piano players, singers, and he was also very generous. He was known as the Good Samaritan. A good Samaritan of the underworld, basically. And he was generous in terms of his charitable work and gave so much money away that he died in 1940 pretty much in poverty.
Well, Jonathan Turner, thank you so much for being here today.
Thanks for having me.
Jonathan Turner is the author of A Brief History of Bucktown, Davenport's Infamous District Transformed. It takes you through the history of this area of Davenport and also through the Renaissance taking place in Davenport these days. Coming up in just a moment, I'll talk with Iowa singer-songwriter Asher Brown. He refers to himself as a self-made man, and that has more meanings than just one. That's coming up in just a moment. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.